Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 7th. Primary election sees low voter turnout. This year, 16,605 residents cast a vote, compared to 24,325 people in 2020. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. A total of 24,325 county residents voted in the presidential primary election in 2020. This year, 16,605 residents cast a vote, according to the Midland County Elections Office. Rosa Olguin, County Election Administrator, said it was hard to identify specific reasons for low voter turnout at the moment, but she said early voting was slow this year compared to previous years. In 2020, 12,343 residents voted early in the presidential primary election. This time, 7,464 residents voted before March 5th. Quote, "It's kind of crazy, considering we had presidential candidates on the ballot, we had a lot of local races on the ballot, sheriff, constable, commissioners, district attorney," Olguin said. There was a major difference in absentee mail-in voting from this year to the last election. There were 1,102 mail-in ballots cast in 2020, and this year there were 297. Although spring 2020 would bring the onset of COVID-19, Midland County hadn't yet shut down the area during the 2020 primary. Quote, "During the primary in 2020 in March here in Midland, we hadn't like shut anything down at that point, so I don't think COVID had a whole lot to do with our numbers for the primary in 2020, Olguin said. Olguin shared that the local canvass will be done on March 14th, and the Texas state canvass must be completed by March 17th. Quote, "Results do not become official until we have been able to process all our provisional ballots. We still have some overseas ballots that we're waiting to get. They get a little extra time to get their ballots in," Olguin said. "So the official results, those will not be ready until next Tuesday, the 12th. End quote. The unofficial results on the Midland County website are accurate as of the night of March 5th. The county still has to collect some outstanding provisional ballots. The elections office did not report any issues at the polls and said election night went smoothly. Sheriff David Kreiner wins re-election. The story was written by B. K. Richter. Midland County Sheriff David Kreiner won his re-election bid during Tuesday's primary election. Kreiner took 51.1% of the vote, with a total of 7,550 ballots cast. The other two Republican opponents included Rory McKinney capturing 33.8% of the vote, with 5,003 ballots cast. Midland native Justin Painter took 15% of the vote, with 2,218 ballots cast. Neither Kreiner nor McKinney responded to requests for interviews by the Reporter Telegram. However, both posted on social media after the race results were in. Quote, "Thank you, Midland County, for your support and exercising your right to vote," Kreiner said in a post on Facebook. "I'm looking forward to serving Midland County as your sheriff for 4 more years," end quote. McKinney posted a message and video on his campaign Facebook page. Quote, "Midland County, your support means the world to us," the post read. "While the outcome may not have been what we hoped for, We stand tall and proud of the campaign we've run. Thank you for believing in us. End quote. McKinney had recently accused Kreiner of using a smear campaign to discredit him by portraying him as a liberal. He denied the accusation in Kreiner's political ad, stating that he was against sanctuary cities. Quote, it's just dirty politics. That's something that a politician knows, McKinney said in a public statement. Harwood defeats McCardle in bid for district attorney's office. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Glenn Harwood defeated Kyle McCardle in the race for the district attorney's office for the County of Midland. Harwood took 67.8% of the vote, with 8,848 votes compared to McCardle's 32.1%, with 4,196 votes. During a phone interview with the Reporter-Telegram Tuesday evening, Harwood shared his background and a strategy for the district attorney's office. Quote, 2 years ago, I decided it was time to run for district attorney, Harwood said. I felt like all along this election was about the community's need for a change. The public was not satisfied with how some of the charging decisions were made. End quote. Harwood will take office for the district attorney seat on January 1st due to the office being unopposed by a Democratic candidate during Tuesday's Texas primary. Harwood referred to himself as an outsider and said that with the depth and breadth of his experience as a federal prosecutor, the necessary changes could be made. Quote, the philosophy that prevails now is that they seem to run with it and take a very passive attitude, he said, of the current district attorney's administration. I want a proactive philosophy, he added. There are also efficiencies that I want to bring to the office of the district attorney. End quote. Part of that process, Harwood said, is getting the prosecutors engaged earlier in the process. Prosecutors should know early on how to assess the case, he added. I would like to shorten that period where cases are prosecuted more efficiently. End quote. McCardle said of the defeat that one of the weaknesses of his campaign was that Harwood started 2 years before him. Quote, I will never say never to trying again, he told the Reporter-Telegram Tuesday. I have been in the district attorney's office 9 years now, and I have tried a case in every courthouse, he said. McCardle thanked his wife for her unwavering support during his campaign. Quote, there were long days of block walking, he explained. I have a strong group of friends that supported me, and I can't thank them enough. End quote. Cold front to drop West Texas wind chills to the 20s by Saturday. The story was written by Anthony Franz, newsroom meteorologist. Meteorological spring started on March 1st, but winter is not done with us yet in West Texas. Warm weather is still expected area-wide on Thursday, but temperatures will start to move the other direction on Friday. Then a strong cold front is set to surge through on Friday night, sending wind chill values back to the 20s. Here's a timeline of what you can expect. Thursday's forecast. A cool and cloudy start is expected for much of West Texas as temperatures hover in the mid-50s early in the morning. A few showers are even possible, but the greatest rain chances will stay in the far eastern Permian Basin. Midland-Odessa's rain chance is only about 20%. By the late morning and afternoon, skies will begin to clear as drier air arrives from the west. Mostly sunny skies are expected by 1 to 3 p.m., and temperatures will rise to the 76 to 78 degree range in Midland-Odessa. It's expected to be the seventh straight day with above average high temperatures in the 70s. Overnight and into Friday morning, a few thunderstorms are expected to develop in the far eastern Permian Basin. Towns such as Garden City and Big Spring have an outside shot at rain, but Midland-Odessa will likely miss out once again. Cooler Friday. A steady west to northwest wind will bring in dry, cool air into West Texas Friday, likely ending the streak of 70-degree days. Early morning low temperatures will fall into the mid to upper 40s, and high temperatures will rise into the mid-60s by the afternoon under mostly sunny skies. By Friday evening, wind speeds will shift and come in straight from the north, signaling the arrival of the next cold front. Temperatures will drop to the 50s shortly after 5 p.m. and quickly reach the 40s after 8 p.m. Northerly winds will jump to 20 to 30 miles per hour, making it feel even chillier. An isolated shower can't be ruled out Friday evening, but rain chances will stay quite low. Cold Saturday morning. Temperatures will continue to plummet overnight and into Saturday morning. Low temperatures are expected to reach the mid-30s in Midland-Odessa, and parts of West Texas will have an outside chance of reaching the freezing mark. Wind speeds will start to weaken in the morning, but they'll still likely be at 15 to 20 miles per hour between 4 and 9 a.m. That will cause wind chill values to bottom out at 25 to 29 degrees. You'll need to bundle up if you have any early morning plans. Thankfully, we're not looking at bitter cold temperatures later in the day. Midland-Odessa will rise to around 50 degrees by noon, and high temperatures will rise to the mid to upper 50s by the late afternoon. Quick warm-up. The winter-like temperatures won't last long. West Texas will already rise into the 60s by Sunday, and the 70s are expected by Tuesday and Wednesday. A few spots could even touch 80 degrees once again. Rain chances are likely to stay low next week, but a few weather models are hinting at isolated thunderstorms. We could absolutely use the rain, since Midland-Odessa has only received 0.58 inches of rain so far in 2024. That's 57% below average through March 6th.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. Entertainment. Three Things to Do in Midland, March 7th through 10th, by B.K. Richter. From a rooftop house party to an Eastern market to a comedy show, here's a list of three things to do in Midland. Rooftop house party. The Doubletree Hotel plans to host a rooftop house party at the Skyview Bar, located on the third floor of the hotel. There will be live DJs spinning DLP, Vassals, Omega Red, and James Boogie. There will also be live art featuring the work of Adam Martinez, Jojo La, and Jam Art Company. There will be a cover charge of $10 for admittance into the event, and only individuals age 21 and up are welcome. The house party will be from 6 until 11 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, with an after-party taking place on the first floor at the Reserve Lounge from 11:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Easter Market. The Hoppin' Poppin' Market plans to host an outdoor shopping market Sunday, March 10th, from 2 until 6 p.m. The location of the market is 104 South Terrell in Midland, There will be a multitude of activities such as bounce houses, food trucks, music, egg hunting with vendors, face painting, and last but not least, photo opportunities with the Easter Bunny. More than 40 vendors are attending the market. Late Night Catechism. Late Night Catechism is described as an uproariously funny play that takes the audience back to their youth. Good audience members can expect to be rewarded for correct answers with glow-in-the-dark rosaries and other prizes. Naughty students from the audience may find themselves sitting on a stage in a corner. The New York Times calls Late Night Catechism an interactive theater at its best and full of laughs. The show is Sunday, March 10th from 3 to 4:35 p.m. at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets and more information are available on the venue's website.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 7th. Orrin Wallace Wade, Jr., age 85, of Midland, passed away Monday, March 4th at Midland Memorial Hospital. A memorial service will be held on Friday, March 8th at Grace Presbyterian Church in Midland at 6 p.m. Graveside services will be held Saturday, March 9th at 11 a.m. at Sweetwater Cemetery in Sweetwater, Texas, under the direction of McCoy Funeral Home. Orrin was born October 29, 1938, in Cincinnati, Ohio. He graduated from Walnut Hills High School in Cincinnati and from the University of Cincinnati with a mathematics degree. Orrin married Linda Taylor in 1965. They lived briefly in Cincinnati and in Lubbock before settling in Midland. He taught mathematics at Lee High School in Midland from 1970 until retiring in 1994. Orrin loved music, playing piano from the age of 8, and eventually serving as a pianist and organist for several churches. Orrin is survived by his son, Kevin Wade, and wife, Patricia, of Midland, daughter, Catherine Karcher, and husband, Scott, of Amarillo, son, Darren Wade, of Littleton, Colorado, brother, Ronald Wade, of Cincinnati, sister, Dorothy Murray, of San Diego, California, 11 grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. He was preceded in death by his wife, Linda, brother David Wade, and his parents. Online condolences may be expressed at www.mccoyfh.com. John Harrell, age 73, of Midland, passed away on March 3rd. A visitation will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, March 8th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 9th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. No interment will follow. John was born October 10, 1950, in Reading, Pennsylvania, to Reynolds Harrell Sr. and Doris Harrell. He served in the United States Air Force at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. He was married for 41 years to Lorraine Harrell. They had three children, Jeff Harrell and his wife, Christy Harrell, daughter, Joni Wallace, and her husband, Matthew Wallace, and daughter, Heather Harrell. He has seven grandchildren and one great-grandchild. He is survived by his wife, three children, seven grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. John is also survived by sisters Doris and her husband Chuck Ames, Frances Miller and her husband Stephen, Teresa Hoffman, Gina Harrell, Marie Heer and her husband Rob, and Jolene Harold, and many nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by Doris Cheeseman, his mother, Reynolds Harold Jr., father, Raina Squate, a sister, and another sister, Michelle Harold. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to the American Heart Association or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Anne Lang. On March 20, 1941, in Marshall, Texas, the Lord blessed Curtis and Mary Waltham Brown with a set of twins, a boy, Gartha Ray Brown, and a girl, Anne Brown. On February 27, 2024, after a lengthy illness, Anne passed away. She was preceded in death by her parents, Curtis and Mary Walton Brown, brothers John C. Brown, Charles D. Brown, Gartha R. Brown, Sr., sisters Joel Randall, Ollie Coleman, Barbara Riptoe, Eunice Tillman. Anne moved to Midland in 1954. She attended and graduated from Carver High School. She worked as a cashier and in the floral department of M System Grocery for a season. Anne served the family of Mr. and Mrs. Robert and Jane Williams for 20 years before retiring. She is survived by her husband of 40-plus years, Leo Lang, her son, Ricky L. Brown of Midland, two brothers, Curtis Brown Jr. of Seattle, Washington, and Willie Brown of Cleveland, Ohio. She is also survived by several grandchildren and great-grandchildren, as well as many nieces and nephews. Services will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 9th, at Faith Temple Church of God in Christ at 1605 North Terrell Street, Keenan Avenue, in Midland, Texas.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, March 7th. Synergy to continue giving back in 2024. Since 2009, Synergy, the family-owned and operated national chain of family entertainment centers and dine-in cinemas, has been finding ways to care deeply about the importance of community. Synergy's ongoing charitable initiatives embody our deep-seated belief in the importance of community, Tracy Hanlon, Synergy's VP of Marketing, said in a news release. Through our unwavering commitment to finding new ways of giving back, we aim to inspire positive change and foster a sense of unity within the communities we proudly serve. Synergy has been championing for its underserved communities and those in need with programs including sensory-friendly screenings, one Saturday each month. At all nine of its locations, Synergy presents a family-friendly film in an auditorium dedicated to guests affected by autism and sensory sensitivities. The screenings are free to attend, open to the public, and feature brightened light levels, reduced sound volume, and room for guest interaction and movement. Soon after Synergy started the program, Superior Health Plan approached the company and got involved. Now guests with autism and sensory sensitivities can come and enjoy the films with their whole family. On average, 75% of available seats across all locations are filled each month. Sound of Freedom. Last July, Synergy reached out to anti-trafficking organization Jocko Bullion's Ministries and offered to donate $1 from each ticket sold for the first 2 weeks of the theatrical release of the film Sound of Freedom. as a result of the Amarillo, Copris Cove, Granbury, Marble Falls, Midland, Odessa, and Tulsa communities coming together to visit their local Synergy Family Entertainment Centers and dine-in cinemas to see the film. Synergy proudly donated $30,000 to the organization. Synergy Heroes. Each year, Synergy asks its communities to nominate a super teacher for a chance to win a $100 fun card. Teacher Appreciation Week. Each August, Synergy gives school teachers the opportunity to visit their local Synergy for a movie on us. In 2023, 1,959 teachers redeemed their free movie tickets. Annual Food Drives. Synergy partners with local food pantries to organize community food drives at all of its locations. In 2023, with the help of the community, Synergy's food donations provided meals for approximately 950 people. Annual Toy Drives. All of Synergy's location held toy drives for the holiday season. In the past 5 years, Synergy has spread holiday cheer with more than 4,000 toys gifted to families across the country. Free movie tickets for veterans on Veterans Day. Each year, Synergy shows its appreciation to the brave men and women who have served in the armed forces by gifting them with free movie tickets for a day. In 2023, 240 veterans redeemed their tickets. Kelm Lewis Kick Out Crow Faction. The positive won out in Ector County on Tuesday's election day. Newly elected GOP County Chair Donna Kelm said after final returns were posted. Kelm and her supporters helped show former GOP Chair Tisha Crow the door after a brutal campaign locally. In early voting, Kelm took a lead of 2,916 to 1,941, and Crow never recovered. The Kelm Crow race was about more than Ector County GOP chair. It was about control of the local party, with both women taking a slate of candidates to the polls with them. When I started this, I wanted unity and transparency and leadership and honesty, Kelm said. All the lies they have posted and all the ugliness, we will not retaliate. We want a clean slate, and hopefully Tisha and I can work together to transfer leadership. Almost all of Kelm's candidates defeated Crow's group, including Mayor Javier Hoven, losing again to Odessan Richard Pierce for precinct chair, and Odessa City Councilwoman Denise Swanner losing to Brenda Worthen. Kelm had to fight to get on the ballot, with Crow supporters refusing to give her the 3 signatures needed by local party chairs. At the last minute, Kelm secured the signatures and led a slate of new faces against Crow's mostly appointed precinct chairs. Some were even appointed as late as November of 2023. Local fake news sites led by failed precinct chair candidate Jeff Russell and the Crow faction posted almost daily misinformation online, and tempers flared during early voting, with both sides handing out cards with a slate of candidates, each dubbed Republicans. Russell lost to Billy DuBose in Precinct 312 for the chair position. Kelm and failed chair precinct chair candidate Carmen Wilhite, who lost to Ronnie Lewis, who helped lead the Kelm faction, had a dust-up during early voting that ended with each accusing the other of assault. Kelm has said she touched Wilhite, who then grabbed Kelm's hair. A witness verified Kelm's recounting of the event, and Kelm ended up at the doctor. Wilhite has not responded to requests for her side of what happened. Lewis overwhelmingly defeated Wilhite. Lewis, like Kelm, bore the brunt of the online harassment from the Crow faction during the campaign. Ronnie pulled a lot of people in, and a lot of us candidates felt just as I did. I felt called to do this, and Ector County on Tuesday proved they were ready for a change, and they now know they were left in the dark for a long time. Kelm vowed to run a local GOP that is open and welcoming to Odessans and not secretive with closed and often locked doors to keep Odessans out. It's not a secret club, and it won't be run that way. Kelm on the campaign trail said she wanted civility back in the local GOP and that she opposed using the local party to endorse one Republican over another. We proved Tuesday that we stepped up and wanted to be helpful to the cause to keep Ector County red, and that keeps Texas red. We want to push the Republican Party to get even more people involved and do meet and greets and show people that what we stand for. Both Kelm and Lewis said they were tired Tuesday night, but will be back at it on Wednesday morning, picking up campaign signs and preparing for the Kelm group's takeover of the local GOP. Gardner reelected, Russell beats Stringer. Incumbent commissioner wins second four-year term. Incumbent Ector County Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner was reelected to a new four-year term Tuesday, while incumbent Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer lost to challenger Samantha Russell. When all the votes came in from Gardner's big West Side Precinct 1 and the more compact Precinct 3, which lies mostly inside the city of Odessa, Gardner's and Stringer's bids for second terms were staged during the factious Ector County Republican primary, which saw vicious infighting among leaders of the party's conservative and ultra-conservative wings and the candidates who carried their ensigns. Gardner's re-election had looked somewhat iffy after he was charged in the accidental shooting of his 12-year-old grandson at a wedding he was presiding over September 30th in Lancaster County, Nebraska, where a homemade blank from a pistol with which Gardner was starting the ceremony went sideways and hit the boy in the shoulder. The case is still being adjudicated. Gardner ended the long night of vote counting that didn't wrap up till nearly midnight with 934 votes of 51.29% to Linda Young Angley's 407 votes or 22.35%, Larry Glenn Robinson's 255 votes or 14%, and David Shaw's 225 votes or 12.36%, as the challengers collectively failed to deny Gardner the 50.01% he needed to avoid a May 28th primary runoff with the front runner. Robinson carried the ultra-conservative banner in that race. Russell, who did the same in her contest, drew 937 votes or 51.94%, while Stringer got 867 votes or 48.6%. There are no Democrats in either race. Gardner said he had worked strenuously for months to win re-election without a runoff, including a lot of block walking with his wife, daughter, and two grandchildren, and talking to as many of his constituents as possible. I made myself available to people, and I have done that since day one, he said. I've been here at the office every day and made my cell phone number known to the public because I think that's what it takes. 90% of the people say, yes, we're going to vote, or we have voted. They liked me being available to them and calling them back when they had issues. Gardner said his late father, Freddie's, having been the longtime Precinct 1 commissioner, has always been an asset. We talked all the time about his philosophy, he said. I probably don't do things as good as he did, but I learned that having good communications with the people you serve makes a huge difference. Efforts to reach Russell Tuesday were unsuccessful. Stringer said he was out knocking on doors and meeting people and doing the very best I could present myself to people who didn't know me as a man of outstanding character. I was also doing my best to ignore the negative Facebook post from Odessa Accountability that tried to tarnish my good name, Stringer said. I wasn't going to let it happen. Gardner and I both needed to be reelected because we have a good court right now. Robinson threatened to punch me at one of the forums. This has been a real clown show. My God has heard from me a whole lot lately. Coterra Energy invests in Midland Culture, Museum of the Southwest. The Museum of the Southwest recognizes Coterra Energy as a significant contributing partner supporting art, culture, science, and history in the Permian Basin. Because of their ongoing commitment to the museum, the Coterra Energy Sound Garden has been named to recognize their investment in public art on the nearly 6-acre campus. A ribbon-cutting and naming ceremony of the Coterra Energy Sound Garden at the Museum of the Southwest is scheduled at 9 a.m. Thursday at Durham Children's Museum, 1705 West Missouri Avenue, Midland. Coterra is playing a pivotal role in our community by making high-impact investments that provide opportunities not usually found outside of our campus. By supporting public art focused on our youth, Coterra is changing not just the physical landscape of Midland, but also the cultural opportunities for future generations. Mary Catherine Marshall, Senior Director of Development and Communications, Museum of the Southwest, said in a news release, "We are humbled by their generosity and vision for the future of the museum." The Museum of the Southwest has established itself as a beacon of community engagement, dedicated to fostering a deep appreciation for arts and culture in the Permian Basin. Coterra Energy is honored to have collaborated with the museum for the past decade, witnessing firsthand their unwavering commitment to building meaningful relationships within the community and among our employees. George Stark, Director, External Affairs, Coterra Energy, said in the release, "As our partnership has grown and evolved, we recognized a mutual need to enhance community facilities. When the museum identified a need for the Sound Garden and our employees expressed a desire for more local family activities, we saw an opportunity to merge these needs into one facility that would benefit the entire community. We take great pride in our long-term commitment to Midland and are thrilled with the new Children's Museum. We felt the Sound Garden was a wonderful venue to offer our neighbors in the basin for generations to come." According to the release, the very industrial-looking structure not only allows for some beautiful melodies to be heard, but when you strike a chord on the Coterra Energy Sound Garden, you will literally feel the sound waves move through the space. Having interactive spaces throughout our campus is something that makes this a place for everyone. Being able to feel, hear, and see art of distinct types isn't an experience you can often find in one location. Coterra makes it accessible to our community, mentioned Marshall. Coterra has continue to support the museum after the 2021 merger between Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation and Cimarex Energy Company, whose longtime support of the museum brought the highly popular Science on a Sphere program to the Marion West and William Blanton Blakemore Planetarium and began providing free admission on Sundays to all guests. Sparklight to award $15,000 to support STEM education through Dream Bigger contest. Sparklight, a leading broadband communications provider, invites schools and organizations serving 12 through K students to enter its sixth annual Dream Bigger contest for the opportunity to win $2,500 for their science, technology, engineering, or math, STEM project or club. K through 12 schools and organizations in communities throughout the 21 states Sparklight serves are eligible to participate. Entries can be made at sparklight.com/contest by sending a photo and written summary outlining how the funds will be used for a technology project or group and how it will benefit students. 6 winners will each receive a $2,500 donation. STEM education helps students develop the critical thinking and problem-solving skills needed for academic and career success. Trish Neiman, Vice President of Communications Strategy, said in a news release, "Through Sparklight's annual Dream Bigger contest, we are proud to help fund STEM-based initiatives that encourage students to develop these skills and find their passion within this rapidly growing career field. Entries will be accepted from February 22nd through March 12th at sparklight.com/contest. 12 finalists will be selected by Sparklight, and the 6 winners will be determined by public online voting from March 14th through March 21st at the same site. The finalists and winning schools and organizations will be highlighted on Sparklight's Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly Twitter, pages. For more information or to enter, visit sparklight.com/contest. JP candidates heading for runoff. The race for Justice of the Peace Precinct 1 was forced into a runoff Tuesday. In unofficial final results, newcomer Jennifer Mahan Woodall netted 684 votes, or 36.58%, edging incumbent Carlos Chavez, who got 618 votes, or 33.96%. Challenger Stephen Brennan got 518 votes, or 28.46%. Mahan, Woodall, and Chavez are heading for a runoff May 28th. Chavez, a longtime lawman, was seeking a full term as Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace after being named to the post in April 2023, following J.P. Terry Lang's retirement. Chavez, 59, served on the Odessa Police Department for more than 30 years and touts his background in law enforcement and his ability to conduct business in Spanish as critical qualifications to residents in the sprawling precinct. Mahan Woodall is an office manager at Brown Oilfield Services. "It was a very tight race, really, between all three of us. I'm looking forward to the runoff," Mahan Woodall said. She added that they plan to pull up their sleeves and continue the work. "I'm confident we'll pull it off come May. I'm still looking to make the positive changes that are needed in Precinct 1, Mahan Woodall said. TABC conducting spring break public safety operations throughout March. Agents from the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission will be in liquor stores, bars, beaches, and other locations where alcohol is sold throughout March as the agency kicks off its annual spring break public safety operations. Dozens of TABC's more than 200 commissioned peace officers will take part in the operations, which identify locations where alcohol is sold to minors in violation of state law. Planned operations for 2024 include underage compliance operations, in which TABC agents attempt to identify businesses selling alcohol to people younger than 21. The spring festival season, including spring break and a number of popular events across the state, is among the busiest times for alcohol retailers, Thomas Graham, TABC Executive Director, said in a news release. "Each year, TABC makes it a point to empower our retailers to identify some of the common violations and take steps to help keep their business and community safe. Prior to the operations, TABC auditors often visit alcohol retailers in the most popular spring break destinations to provide training and answer questions about best practices related to preventing the sale of alcohol to minors. One such meeting took place at South Padre Island in mid-February, giving retailers there a chance to learn about best practices to avoid safety risks such as illicit alcohol sales. The ultimate goal is not to penalize retailers who are doing their best to conduct business during a busy time, Graham said. What we want to do first and foremost is to ensure they have the tools they need to successfully operate while keeping their customers and employees safe. Businesses that sell alcohol to people under 21 could face a civil fine or suspension of their license to sell alcohol. Employees who conduct the sale could also find themselves charged with a Class A misdemeanor punishable by a fine up to $4,000 and up to 1 year in jail. For more information about TABC, visit tabc.texas.gov. Obituaries. Philip Zenasai Obituary. Philip Haynes Zenasai. Born September 8, 1934, died February 29, 1924, was born in Hebronville, Texas, close to Corpus Christi, to Joseph Zenasai and Nona Haynes Zenasai. Services were at 5 p.m. March 1st at First United Methodist Church. Chelsea Teresa Whitaker. Chelsea Teresa Whitaker, services will be held at a later date. Chelsea Teresa Whitaker, 52, of Odessa, died March 1st in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jerry J. Swartz. It is with sadness that we announce the passing of Jerry J. Swartz on February 27th in Odessa. A private funeral service with the immediate family is planned. Freddie Robertson. Freddie Robertson, 77, passed away on Friday, March 1st. The visitation will be from 7 to 9 p.m. on Thursday, March 7th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at 11 a.m. Friday, March 8th at Grace Christian. Gary Michael Pillen. Services will be held at a later date for Gary Michael Pillen, 68, of Odessa, who died Sunday, February 29th in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Roy Wilford Payne. Roy Wilford Payne, 48, of Odessa, died Monday, February 26th in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. March 7th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are under Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Christopher Tyler Mata. Christopher Tyler Mata, age 28, was born August 19, 1995, sharing a birthday with his great-grandmother, Maria Luisa Reyes. Visitation will be held Thursday, March 7th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home with a rosary at 7 p.m. Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, March 8th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church with burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Rose Hill Section. Marilyn K. Hemman. Marilyn K. Hemman, a beacon of faith and the heart of her family, passed away peacefully on February 29th. A visitation was held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 5th at the McNett Funeral Home Chapel with rosary following at 7 to 9 p.m. Arrangements are under the personal care of McNett Funeral Home. David White Garza. David White Garza, 61 years young, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, February 29th, surrounded by his family. He was born in Odessa to Jorge Garza and Cynidia Gutierrez. Funeral service will be held March 8th at 2 p.m. at Chapel Hill Baptist Church. McCoy Curley. McCoy Curley went to meet his Lord and Savior on Sunday, February 25th. McCoy was born on August 6, 1936 in Harriman, Tennessee to W.W. and Mary Ann Curley McCoy. McCoy and his family moved to Hobbs in 1941. A celebration of life will be held on Friday, March 8th at 3 p.m. at Taylor Street Church of Christ, 216 East Taylor Street in Hobbs. Memorial contributions can be made to the New Mexico Christian Children's Home, 1356 New Mexico, 236 Portales, New Mexico, 88130. Yvonne Bertrand. Yvonne Smith Bertrand, 84 of Odessa, peacefully passed away on February 28th in Midland. Yvonne was born in Minter, Texas to Charles and Catherine Smith on September 4th, 1939. No services are scheduled. A family celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. She Can Conference brings good turnout. Stories of persistence, resilience, and being role models were told by three beauty queens at She Can, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce's Women's Conference, Wednesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. It was also an occasion to honor Betsy Triplett Hurt, who has been a philanthropist and served on many boards and commissions to better the community. About 450 people attended, moderated by Shelby Landgraf, Vice President of Development for the Monument Men and Women Foundation. The panel included Tatum Hubbard, University of Texas Permian Basin Chief of Staff and Miss Texas 1998, Regina Stock, Mrs. America 2023, and Chandler Foreman, KMID TV Channel 2 anchor, and Miss Texas 2019. The theme was Beyond the Crown, the Beauty Within. Hubbard competed for 6 years before winning the Miss Texas title. She started at 19 right out of high school and wanted to be a dancer. Back then, there was no So You Think You Can Dance, so she could perform on a cruise ship. I won about $50,000 in scholarship money, and I paid for my education. And I got to do an internship in Washington, D.C. And none of those things would have been possible without that journey, Hubbard said. Stock said she started competing when she was 18 or 19 in the Miss USA system. I competed for Miss Texas 4 years in a row. I would win the local titles here, but I would never place at Miss Texas. So once I started the family, I stepped away from it. Last year, believe it or not, was the first year I ever competed for Mrs. Texas, Stock said. I guess it took off all the pressure. I came back to find myself outside of being a mom and being a wife. I wanted to do something for me. That was my first time competing, and I just happened to take the crown, Stock added. Foreman competed 4 times in the Miss Texas organization. She was 16 when she started and would keep winning scholarship money as she went so her parents wouldn't have to pay out of pocket for her tuition. My 4th year is when I would be crowned Miss Texas 2019 and 2020 because we didn't have a pageant in 2020 because that was the pandemic, Foreman said. She has competed from the time she was 5 in things like Junior Olympics track. She was a flautist, a cheerleader, and ran track. It was in me to compete. I think competing in the Miss America organization unraveled a new layer, Foreman said. She added that it helped make connections with peers, helped her find scholarships, find out who she was in her faith, and helped her show others that they could do what she was doing. Only a month after being crowned Miss America, Stock wound up in the ER in Midland. Doctors found a 19-centimeter tumor on her left kidney. it ended up being an extremely rare form of kidney cancer. Only 5% of kidney cancer patients get it. And so I was on this high having just won Mrs. America. I was on top of the world to finding out at 27 years old I had cancer. I'm a mom of young kids. Our youngest is 3 years old. I was ready to start a business before the end of the year, and I was like, what does this mean? In that moment, everything was put on pause, Stock said. She planned to compete in Miss World in January. Stock was left waiting and having no answers on what was next. On one hand, I wanted to be stubborn, and I told my husband, I will be Mrs. World, whatever it takes. I will be there, even if I have to work flats. But on the other hand, if I knew I couldn't go, I wanted to make sure that I gave my runner-up, Mrs. California, plenty of time to prepare, because this pageant is 9 days long. It is a marathon. It involves a lot of preparation. So I didn't want to be stubborn to wait until that last week and be like, hey girl, sorry, I didn't make it, you're up. It wasn't fair to her. But I obviously knew that I had to put my health first. So I actually ended up having surgery November 1st. I had my left kidney removed and the entire tumor. So I'm now cancer-free, Stock said. She placed in the top six in Mrs. World. Stock added that she had a lot of support from her family, her community, and the pageant community. My pageant sister started a GoFundMe for me, and I was just overwhelmed with all the love and support that I got, and it was the most difficult time in my life. But to be honest with you, it would have been much more difficult had I not gone through this pageant journey. Like I told you earlier, I started competing again to find myself. I was a mom, I was a wife, and I was like, what am I here for? What is my purpose? Stock said. The one thing that a lot of people don't realize about pageantry is so much more than just the onstage portion. For a lot of pageants, your interview is actually half of your score, but that's the part that you guys never get to see, she added. She is now preparing to open a pharmaceutical medical tattooing business, camouflaging scars and stretch marks. I never had any scars, and after my cancer journey, I have an 8-inch scar across my abdomen. So for me, it confirmed that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. I'm on the right path, and I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, Stock said. When Odessa Chamber of Commerce President Renee Henderson Earls approached Triplet Hurt about being honored as a community trailblazer, she said no, that there were so many others she could choose. She said that it's the 90th anniversary of the Odessa Chamber, and I was the first female president. So when she put it in that context, I realized it's not about me, because it's not about me. It is about the history of the chamber. I just happened to fit that one little spot. So it's not about me, it's about the work of the chamber, and they took the chance, and I guess I didn't mess it up too bad, she said. Triplet Hurt added that we are here to serve. In her remarks, she said she was going to talk about having faith in yourself. For me, I think women need to do their homework and be prepared, and I learned from me you need to know what your weaknesses are as well. So maybe more importantly than what your strengths are, then you find people who have the skills that you don't have, and you make them look good, because then they'll make you look good, Triplet Hurt said. New photo ID self-serve booth open for passports. If you are thinking about traveling abroad this summer, you may need to update your credentials. You can save time and money at the Ector County Library since prints are $14.99 with a credit card. Instant ID photos now here are $2 cheaper than Walgreens or CVS, plus no appointments are ever needed. Walk-ins are accepted Monday through Friday, 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., except for noon lunch hour. This is a one-stop shop with getting your passport renewed or set up, or ideal for a visa. Passport visa photos are biometrically checked to ensure they meet domestic and foreign requirements. They are valid for more than 30 countries. Good for families, good for adults, and kids alike. It's quick, it's easy, it's discreet, even take a photo for business purposes, optional digital copy for extra in addition to printed photo. For more details and information on third floor passports, check out https://ector.lib.tx.us/passports/. The Ector County Library was established in 1938. It is free and open to the public. Serves all ages, has an extensive collection of 200,000 printed books, over 20,000 e-books, nearly 100 databases, and serves a population of over 170,000 people locally and regionally.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.